Session number 1244 rule 2.
Admiral McLean, reel 2.
Take your hands off the engine room telegraphs. And the captain apparently said, we all learnt all this later, if I don't stop the engines, my ship will run ashore. And Turner apparently said, well, let it. All we knew was that the engines of the Altmark stopped. And all seemed quiet. And in Admiral Vaughan's words in his book, we thought perhaps it was then going to be a drawing room affair. But we then heard shooting. We felt that the Altmark had run aground. You could tell the ship bouncing a bit. And we saw men from the Altmark jumping over the side into the ice, members of the ship's company. And it was rather horrible, this, because the ice was not really sufficient to take their weights. And our boarding party started shooting at them as they went across the ice. And I think one or two of them were killed, either by falling through the ice or just being shot. Some of them got ashore and started shooting from the shore, but they were also shot at by our boarding party, and that didn't go on for very long. So we were left with a fairly quiet Altmark and waiting for Turner to do his famous search of the ship. I should say one thing that Admiral Vaughan didn't put in his account was that we had been told, where the rumour had come from I don't know, that I think from probably one of the captured people on board, that the Altmark had a bomb set off to blow up at midnight. All this action I've been describing was taking place at about 10 o'clock at night. And this concentrated our minds very much, because although we didn't know whether to believe it or not, but it put some urgency into the operation. And, well, the story then is all well known. Turner shouted down the hatch and said, the Navy's here, and they all poured out. And we were able quite easily now to go alongside the Altmark and embark. 299 men, I'm reminded of by reading these papers, from the Altmark, prisoners.
What did they look like as they came on board?
Not too bad. Another rumour swept through the Cossack as soon as we got them on board, that one of them had leprosy, which concentrated the mind of our doctor. But that turned out to be absolute rubbish. And we, with very great skill by the Cossacks, sort of supply staff, we gave them food of some sort. But they couldn't all be put down below. They had to stay up on the gun deck and everywhere, all over the ship. And we then, I think it was really quite close to midnight, we set off. And at some period, we suddenly realized that we not only had the Norwegian torpedo boat alongside, but we had the captain of the Norwegian torpedo boat on the bridge. And Captain Vaughan said to me, turn the ship round and we'll go out. And I said, I remember, where's that bloody Norwegian? And a voice said, here am I. And he was ushered down to his little boat alongside and went off. And we turned round and went to sea.
What was the Norwegian's reaction when he was proved wrong about the prisons on board?
Depressed. I'll tell you why they were able to say this. That also comes out in Admiral Vaughan's book, that there was confusion in language at Trondheim. The ship had not been searched. She'd been visited. And the prisoners told us that they knew there were Norwegians looking for them, but the Altmark apparently worked all her auxiliary machinery and her cranes and made a tremendous noise in the ship so that their shouting couldn't be heard. And the Norwegians did not believe the story that she had these men on board. It wasn't duplicity or anything, it was misunderstanding.
Did he make any comment when all these men came on board?
I can't remember. I think not, because I wouldn't have said, where was he? I knew he was there.
Were the survivors all elated?
I don't remember shouting and yelling and all that sort of thing. I think they were pretty relieved and pretty exhausted. But I don't remember great shouts of jubilation or anything.
Were you very surprised when so many came out?
No, I think we... I couldn't give a good answer to that. I don't remember being very surprised. And then when we apparently, again in Admiral Vaughan's book, as soon as we got out, he received a signal from the Admiralty saying that we were to capture the Altmark. I should have added perhaps earlier on that during the evacuation of the prisoners, Craven, the Norwegian reserve officer, British reserve officer who spoke Norwegian, was seen coming down the Altmark's deck with the captain and one or two other officers at pistol point. And Captain Vaughan thought the complications enough, what with he'd received no signal from the Admiralty at the time saying capture the ship. Thought really the best thing to do was to let well alone, what was territorial waters and all. So he told Craven to let them go. And they disappeared back into the Altmark. And Captain Vaughan got a signal from the Admiralty after we got out saying you ought to capture the Altmark and to capture the captain. Which is very annoying. But they eventually followed it up by saying, forget that signal and just get out with the prisoners. It would have been absurd if we couldn't capture the ship because she was hard aground and she wasn't much use to the Germans for a bit.
What about taking the prisoners back to safety?
Back to where?
Safety.
Well, we set off at midnight and were promised air cover at dawn, which we got. And we had our own ships with us, who'd been waiting outside. And we all set off for a Scythe at full speed. And we had no... I think we had warning of air attack, but we didn't... My recollection is we had no German air attack at all. And we had a perfectly uneventful trip back to the south. And we were taken into Leith and put in the dry dock there because we'd been manoeuvring very hard in this ice and there was a chance that we damaged our propellers. And they were all disembarked from there. And that was really that.
Were the media people there to welcome them?
I'm sure they were, but I don't recollect any of them. They may have interviewed the captain, but they weren't as powerful as they are these days. I have no recollection of seeing any media people. I can't remember what happened just after that. We were quite glad to get back and see them all safely ashore.
How long did you stay with the Cossack after this?
Well, this was in February. I think I left in about March.
Were there any other duties that the Cossack had or any other memories from the Cossack after the Altmark?
No, I think not. And I rather think we transferred back to the Afridi, who'd been down at Middlesbrough doing a refit and a boiler clean. I think we transferred back to the Afridi before I left, and Captain Sherbrooke, later become famous, took command of the Cossack.
I know that later on in the war you were on the Ark Royal.
Yes.
What did you do between the Cossack and joining?
Well, I spent a good deal of time, to begin with, looking for the Ark Royal. If you remember, there was a great hoo-ha with Lord Haw-Haw at the time. Where is the Ark Royal? And I was appointed to the Ark Royal, but I couldn't find her either.
These were Haw-Haw's claims that it had been sunk.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, she was engaged in the Norwegian campaign, which blew up, you see, very soon after that. Germans went into Norway. And then she went down to the Mediterranean, to Gibraltar. And I, wherever I went, I missed her. And eventually I went out in another aircraft carrier called the Argus from Glasgow, and I picked up the Ark Royal in July. I went sick in the interval of this undignified disease of a carbuncle on my backside. And when the Ark Royal came into the tail of the bank, Glasgow, on her way to the Mediterranean, I was laid up. And I couldn't join her.
Was this suffering from living conditions?
Oh, I don't know what it was. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anyone knew. So I didn't really get down to the thing again until the end of June. Then I went out in the Argus July to Gib.
How did you like serving on an aircraft carrier?
Oh, I was thrilled. I always wanted to do that.
Why was it so good?
Why?
Yes.
It's an extremely interesting job with the aircraft operations. Being in a battleship or a cruiser seemed possibly rather dull after the thought of an aircraft carrier. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time. I loved the Ark Royal, and everyone who was in the Ark Royal felt the same about her.
Was that because of the leadership on board?
I suppose it must have been. There was an excellent captain, a very good commander, a very good padre, and, of course, the air crew were all dedicated people. And the morale of the ship was quite remarkable.
What kind of duties was Ark Royal taking up when you joined her?
She'd just come back from, unfortunately, I missed it, just come back from the sad story of Mers el Kebir, where Admiral Somerville was forced to sink and put out of action a lot of the French fleet. And she came back to Gib, and I joined her then. And my captain, of course, Captain Holland, in the Ark Royal, had been the man who had gone into Mers el Kebir in a destroyer before the action to try and reason with the French admiral, because he knew him personally. He had been the naval attaché in Paris and spoke very good French. So it was all very close that he was shattered by his experience, I think. We felt sure that he was able to persuade the French to do one of the two things that the British had asked them to do. Either, I can't remember what they were. One was to sail to the West Indies or something like that. But it failed.
And so you were on Mediterranean convoys then, weren't you?
Well, Gibraltar's an awkward place because there was the whole Atlantic on one side and the whole Mediterranean on the other. And we did both. We were never in harbour more than one night. We were either doing a convoy to Malta or we were out chasing the Hipper in the Atlantic. Just time to fuel in between. This is one of the reasons, I think, why the Ark Royal was lost. Because she never had a chance to have a decent refit during all that time. She was absolutely run into the ground or run into the sea. But it was very exciting. Gibraltar was, you wouldn't think it, but it was an absolute mecca.
In what terms?
Well, run ashore, beer, all these things which sailors and the officers missed.
What about Axis spies ashore?
Well, I'll just say, you know Gibraltar Bay. Algeciras was obviously watching every movement we made. And we used to have to do all sorts of diversions, like sailing it in the late afternoon and staring out into the Atlantic in order to go back into the Mediterranean to do a trip into the Mediterranean. Whether it fooled anyone, I don't know. And Toulouse Radio, which was then, by that time, under Nazi control, I think, used to broadcast our movements, as far as I can recollect. It was very difficult.
So it was like being goldfish in a glass bowl?
Yes. I suppose we occasionally put up a slight diversion, managed to persuade them we were going somewhere else, but it soon came out.
What are the times that stick out in your mind when you came closest to the enemy on the Ark Royal before she was sunk?
Well, the enemy consisted almost entirely of Air Force. We never went further east than the Malta Channel. The convoys were then left to dash through the Malta Channel on their own, usually at night. And the only time we nearly came in contact with the Italian fleet was when they sorted from Genoa while we were doing a run with one of the convoys, name which I forget. And Admiral Somerville, who was in command, ordered us to send a torpedo bomber attack to meet these people, and ordered some of the ships of our escort to go and meet them also. But they were a long way away, and it was clear that we would never make contact with them for some considerable time. And leaving the convoy would have exposed them to no defense at all in the event of air attack. And he decided, quite rightly, that the convoy was the thing. So he recalled the forces he'd sent after the Italians, and we remained with the convoy. They never came near us. And then we turned around and went home. And this was went back to Gib. And this was very much criticized by, I suppose, Mr. Churchill. Anyhow, a retired admiral of the fleet called Lord Cork and Orrery was sent out to Gibraltar when we got back to conduct a court of inquiry into Admiral Somerville's conduct, which infuriated us. And at the end of his inquiry, he decided that Admiral Somerville had done absolutely the right thing, that the convoy's protection was more important than chasing this elusive Italian fleet. And he was exonerated. But it wasn't a pleasant thing for him.
What about the pursuit of the Bismarck? What memories do you have of that?
Well, one, I used to have a little cabin up on the bridge of the Ark Royal, which I slept in harbour. Because we were always being called out, and it's more convenient up there. And I remember that about 3 o'clock one morning, a signalman came into this cabin and said, we've just received a signal saying the Bismarck has been sighted by the Norfolk and Suffolk, was it?
Yes.
Up in the Denmark Strait. And I remember turning over in my bunk and saying, thank God it doesn't touch us. And went to sleep again. Not so the command of Force H, and within a few hours we were told to raise steam and sail to the north, just in case. And we set off, and as usual the weather became very bad up through the Bay of Biscay, and we had news of this running battle, and we had news of the sinking of the Hood, and I remember that was very traumatic, because the signalman came down onto the bridge of the Ark Royal and showed the signal, the captain, a signal. And the captain looked pretty grim and said, "Do not have this signal circulated anywhere in the ship." He then said to us, "The Hood's been sunk," which was a tremendous thing in those days, because the Hood was supposed to be invincible, quite wrongly. And he wouldn't let the signal be broadcast to the ship until he personally went on the loudspeaker and told the ship's company. That I remember very well.
How did he put it?
I can't remember. Put it very well. But that was how I received that news. Well, then we went on to the north with the Renown, the Sheffield. I think the destroyers had to turn back because of the weather. The only ship of our force that had radar, believe it or not, was the Sheffield. We had none, the Renown had none. They had radar on the King George's Fifth, and I think in the Norfolk and Suffolk. We hadn't got it. And we learnt from signals from the Admiralty about the Prince of Wales trying to engage the Bismarck and then turning away. She, if you remember, had her turret was full of, one of our turrets was full of workmen from Vickers Armstrong. She hadn't finished working up. And the Bismarck then disappeared. I think one of the cruisers managed to keep her on their radar. And the next thing was that the aircraft carrier Victorious and whoever was escorting her, I think she'd come from the States or somewhere. As you know, she went in and carried out an attack and scored a torpedo bomber attack and scored a hit or one or two hits. Whatever happened to the Bismarck at that time, the Admiral and the Bismarck very foolishly broke wireless silence and made a signal to the German Admiralty saying that he'd had some damage, I think from the Prince of Wales, I think from the Victorious, was losing fuel, and he was going to make for Brest. So this immediately put us in the picture, because we were coming up from the south and the Bismarck was coming in from the west. The home fleet was miles astern and there was nothing except Force H, the Ark Royal, the Renown, and the Sheffield, between the Bismarck and Brest. And we had an air patrol up. I'm wondering what time of day it all happened, but I suppose it was in the early dawn or something. There was a Catalina on patrol, and she picked up the Bismarck on her radar. We then were a long way to the south, and she couldn't stay very long. She was nearly at the end of her patrol, but we launched a reconnaissance of Swordfish aircraft, two wings and propeller, known as Stringbergs, and they managed, with the help of the Catalina, to find the Bismarck, who was then doing high speed towards Brest. And it was clearly up to us to try and intercept her. A signal had been received from the Admiralty to Admiral Somerville saying the Renown was on no account to engage the Bismarck unless she was already engaged with other of our home fleet forces. Obviously triggered off by the loss of the Hood, because the Renown was the same class. So the day wore on, and it was very rough, I have to emphasize, and we had magnetic pistols on our torpedoes, which the aircraft were on with, which were meant to go off under the target. And we armed our aircraft with these magnetic pistols and prepared to fly them off. Meanwhile, Admiral Somerville had sent the Sheffield with her radar to go ahead and see if she could pick up the Bismarck herself and shadow her exactly on the bearing in which our aircraft had to go. We launched our aircraft, and within quite a short time, a surprisingly short time, we got a signal from them saying they'd located the enemy when we were going into attack. And on the bridge we said, "Hope it isn't the Sheffield." And the captain said, "Sheffield is astern of us." And he hadn't been shown the signal, which was not made to us anyway, telling the Sheffield to disengage and go ahead, so that neither he nor the operations room in the Ark Royal knew the Sheffield was between us and the enemy, which was very awkward. But luck was with us, because these magnetic pistols, as I understand it, worked on pressure, and the sea was so rough that they were set fairly shallow, and the rough seas triggered them off. The Sheffield took most violent avoiding action, and eventually she was recognised, but it was very thick. You couldn't see very much. It was extremely rough. And thank God, nothing happened. And these poor chaps in the aircraft then had to come back, land on the Ark, who was pitching very severely, and another lot had to be re-equipped, re-armed, and some of the same ones had to go back again and have another go. All the time, of course, the Bismarck was getting nearer to Brest. It was becoming more and more of a difficulty. And off they went, these gallant men, and they found the Bismarck, who put up a tremendous anti-aircraft barrage, as far as I know. And they didn't score any hits, or none noticeable, until... And we were plotting. By that time, we'd got the Sheffield's radar track of the Bismarck, and we were plotting her course, rushing towards Brest. And suddenly, she stopped rushing towards Brest, all the while our aircraft were still with her and attacking her. And she did the most extraordinary turn round.